Hello, friends, and welcome to Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting live from the studios of KKNW at 1150 a.m. here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. I'm so happy you're all listening today because the purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a much better place. I want to thank everyone so much for listening today and making Out of This World Radio one of the most talkative talk shows in the Seattle area. And we now have over a quarter of a million listeners in 90 countries. And I just thank everyone so much for their beautiful support. I know if we all work together, we can and will make this planet a much better place. And on that note, I have some fantastic news to share with you. For my second hour, I'll tell you in just a few minutes. I don't want to keep you in suspense. But during the first hour now, from 2 to 3 p.m., I'll be playing a pre-record I did with Simon Parks a few days ago. He's a wonderful fellow, and I know you'll enjoy it. Then my good news will come on the second hour as well, because from 3 to 3:30 p.m., there's a wonderful lady who's decided to step forward and donate $30,000 so that everyone on the Kopi Reservation in Arizona can have clean water. This money will buy water filters for the entire reservation. Up until for decades, the people there have been drinking water tainted with arsenic and have been getting cancer and dying. And I want to thank this individual so much. For privacy reasons, I'm not going to mention her name. But I know if she's listening, I think she's listening today. I just want to thank her so much. The news brought tears to my eyes a couple days ago. I'll be bringing on Leon McLaughlin of the Washington Clean Water Foundation, Michiko Hayashi, the Modal Peace Project in Tokyo, Japan, Vernon Masayeva, I hope I pronounced that right, an elder with the Hopi tribe in Arizona, and Martha Chowdhury of the Natural Choice Network. And this donation, it represents how good people are. And I know our basic human nature is to be kind, benevolent, and loving humans, and I'm just so happy this happened. Anyway, we'll be talking about that. Then at about 3:30 today, I'll be interviewing a lady named Birgitta Jonestor. She was a former member of the Icelandic Parliament, and she was instrumental in having the bankers who helped cause the collapse of the Icelandic economy in 2008 arrested and put in jail. Many of those bankers are still in jail. And it was an amazing story. I was in Iceland recently, interviewed her. Her interview is in two parts. The first part will be played today, and the next part will be played next week. I'd like to thank everyone's support so much for this radio program. We rely solely upon donations, and if you'd like to donate, please go to the donate button at the upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com. I'd also like to thank the many sponsors, including Corey and Saul from Kirkland, for their generous support, and all my friends in Costa Rica, in England, and in Norway, and everywhere around the world. Also, I'd like to thank my dear friend Carol, who's designing my website and providing wonderful support. And I want to tell people, too, that I have a spiritual mentoring program where I teach people how to contact their angels and spirit guides. And if you'd like to get in touch with your angels, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. I also wanted to tell you some wonderful psychic and spiritual fairs coming up. On December 1st, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., I'll have a very special psychic and healing fair in Olympia, Washington. Olympia is about an hour south of Seattle, just off of exit either 111 or 114. And while I'm there, I'll also be giving free readings to everyone who comes. It's my way of giving back to everyone who supported me. I won't be doing anything by telephone, but if you come down, I'll be happy to give you a good free reading. And in addition to that, at 11 a.m., I'll be giving a free special presentation on how to heal with scalar energy. My friend Tom Palladino does a lot of healing with scalar energy, and I'll be going over his work. He has a free healing program, too, that I'll be talking about. And then at 12 noon, I'll be giving a free lecture on my update on my new book that was published last year called Messages from the Masters, with some exciting, wonderful updates from Albert Einstein, President John F. Kennedy, Nostradamus, and others on some really wonderful things happening right now on this planet. I'll be returning to Mount Shasta in California from July 2nd to July 8th, and again from September 5th to the 11th. Mount Shasta is a very special and magical place where miracle healings occur from the Talosians. And my own eyesight in September when I was there was healed. For decades, I had had blurry 20/50 vision in my right eye, and Adama, the high priest of Telos, healed my eye one night, and now I have 20/10 crystal clear vision in both eyes, and I want to thank him so much. If you're interested in going, the cost is only $200 per person and includes free camping. It is starting to fill up, so if you do want to come, please let me know as soon as possible. just send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. With that, I'd like to welcome my good friend Simon Parks to the program. This interview was pre-recorded several days ago, and I'll be coming on at the end of the hour to wrap up his interview. Thank you so much, Eric, for your help today. Hello, friends. I'm here with my friend, good friend Simon Parks, coming to us live from England today. Simon's a lifelong experiencer of aliens, shadow people, elementals, UFOs, mantis beings, Draconis reptilian, tall and gray creatures, crystalline beings, and other creatures that just can't be identified. He's an elected politician and served a full term of office. His parents worked for both American and British intelligence services. He's a wonderful guy, and I'm so happy he's on my show today. Simon, how are you today?
Hello, Ted. I'm really great. That's wonderful. Thanks ever so much.
Oh, good, good. So happy to have you on today. I was going to ask you, you know, you said before off air a few minutes ago that there's been so much going on in the world. Please tell us, from your perspective, all the interesting things happening.
Right.
In 25 words or less.
I think that all of these terrible things that have taken place with the shooting at the Jewish building.
Right.
We've had the other shootings, school, and just recently, of course, in Australia, there has been another attack which seems to have been prevented or partially prevented. Mm-hmm. And it all started with the so-called pipe bombs. And literally, we've seen one thing after another. I do not believe that these are in isolation. I think we have to look at them as part of a program, part of a group. And I said on my website that, in my opinion, it was a very negative force that was becoming deeply frustrated and was lashing out. And right across the planet, we're seeing this outpouring of uncontrolled, rather heavy, dense, demonic energy, which is bringing about these terrible things. And I know we talk about false flags, but I do want to remind people that in many cases, whether they're false flags or not, people do get hurt. Not everyone is an actor. It's not everyone covered in red paint. There are genuinely people who do get hurt. So I just wanted to say that this is part of the great drama that is unfolding, and it's always going to be in the United States, by and large. Mm-hmm. The elections are quite interesting because it was obvious about 4 to 5 days before the poll, mm-hmm, that the Republicans would lose the House, but actually had a reasonable chance of holding on or just slightly increasing in the Senate. And of course, what we saw was quite a big swing to the Republicans in the Senate. Now, what that means is that President Trump is safe for the next 2 years, two and a bit years. He will not be impeached. He cannot be got rid of. But what it also means is that he can now launch into the 2020, I think it'll be, the next presidential election. So he will put his name forward, and I believe Mike Pence will also put his name forward as the running mate. So, mm-hmm, defied expectations, and we saw President Trump remove the CNN pressman's pass, and that was very interesting. I watched very carefully the video, and the CNN pressman does indeed not just resist giving the microphone to the White House aide, but he uses his arm to slightly push the woman aide's arm out of the way. Mm-hmm. So that was a step too far. If the president of the United States says to you, sit down, right, then you sit down. And it doesn't matter whether you're a Democrat or Republican. He is your president. He is the president of the United States. And if he says, pass the microphone on, and you refuse to, well, you've stepped out of line. Mm-hmm. Because there has to be some form of respect here. Because if the world stage sees American people and disrespecting their president, then the world will say, why should we respect America? That's so true. I think that these media people have got too big. They believe that they are more powerful. They've lost touch. And the reality is that by taking away his pass, CNN top executives will now have to consider whether they are quite happy being pushed out in the cold and not getting all the news stories, or whether they very quietly remove their man and put someone else in. Mm-hmm. So just to round up then, the terrible things that are happening at the moment, please see that as part of an ongoing campaign. The election result was far better for the Republicans than was expected, and it means that the indictments are safe. One of the problems that we had was if the House was lost and the Senate was lost, there was a real possibility these indictments could be held up. I've now got proper confirmation that there's over 60,000 indictments, and I'm going to be putting something on my website in the next few days with giving proof that there are 60,000 indictments. I haven't got the names and addresses of all the indicted people, and I wouldn't do that, but I do have a breakdown of every state in America and how many indictments have been drawn up by that legislature within that state and then forwarded to the White House. So there's real concrete proof that there are thousands of indictments. What we don't know is if and when they'll be opened. So that's really my sort of update there, Ted.
One of the things that I've heard about is that Hillary Clinton is actually wearing, it looks like a kind of a cast on one of her legs, Simon, that's used for healing like a broken bone or whatever. But people have told me that that's actually a home detention device. Apparently that she's already been served with an indictment. Do you have any information on that, Simon, or any developments around her?
There was talk of this during the election period, 2 years ago plus, mm-hmm. That there was a temporary period where they were worried that she might try and disappear. Right. What I can say is that all I can genuinely, truthfully say is that some of the indictments have indeed been opened. Now, in terms of the senators and the congressmen and women, prior to this election, you will have noticed that the largest number in your American history, refused to run for office again. Number retiring was the largest it's ever been.
My goodness, yeah.
My understanding is that a lot of those were shown the indictments and told that if they did not stand for office, the indictments would not be processed. Now, I also am led to believe that these indictments that have been opened are to do with fraud. So they're to do with corruption and fraud. So information I'm getting is the first indictments now being opened are to do with money laundering, taking a kickback when a civic building is being built, all the money corruption. So that's the one that have been done. So I can confirm that they are being opened. Mm-hmm. But the ones to do with money laundering, fraud and corruption, now I can't confirm whether anyone of that high office has actually been served an indictment at the moment.
There's been persistent rumors here in this country about pedophilia and sexual crimes. Have you had any information about that coming through, about the indictments?
Great deal. A very great deal.
Okay.
My understanding is that the lesser crimes are being dealt with first. These are the ones that are being opened, because the sort of deal that's been done under the table, mm-hmm. is that, look, if you were governor of a state and you took $500,000 kickback and you allowed developments to go on that you pushed through within 2 years but should have taken 5 years, well, you know, that's America. Right. So basically we'll deal with it quietly and in-house. Sure. If we're talking about child trafficking or satanic ritual abuse, well, these are the ones that are being held back till last. So that's why some of these indictments are being dealt with quietly, mm-hmm. because Trump is saying, look, you know, this is what America does. But he's drawn a line, I understand, between the usual money deals that people do under the table in the US, sure. as opposed to bringing Mexican children in for sexual purposes, which he's not tolerating. So I can confirm
that's good. He's not tolerating that. Yeah.
No, definitely. You know,
absolutely.
Look, one thing I want to say is that everyone to a certain extent, well, nearly everyone to a certain extent, has some pressure point, mm-hmm. some control. Yeah. And we must remember that President Trump's got children, and some of those children are Jewish. And that's a fact, and they're very strongly Jewish.
Sure.
But one thing President Trump is not, he's not a Satanist. Mm-hmm. One thing President Trump has never done is indulge with sexual activity with underage. Mm-hmm. He hasn't done that. Now, that puts him in a completely different ball game,
right,
as opposed to many others. So whatever he may have done, he's not satanic. And that means that he's not controllable by the same forces that have controlled nearly every other senior politician or lawmaker in the US over the last 50, 60 years.
Right.
Well, that is why Hollywood, not totally, but large numbers of people in Hollywood hate President Trump, because child trafficking and paedophilia, I think, is going to, in the future, be shown to have some very interesting backers. There are other organizations in the media that don't like Trump. When, and fingers crossed, as we say in Great Britain, when these indictments are opened, some of these household names, pillars of the establishment, organizations that have sold themselves as more American than American pie, mm-hmm. when these organizations are shown for what they are, it's going to be the remaking of the United States of America. That's the opportunity that exists.
Sure.
That's what we hope happens.
Mm-hmm. Good, because I think everyone listening to this program today certainly would not condone any kind of sexual crimes against children, especially, or any sexual crimes whatsoever. That's not the norm of this country. That's the abnormal norm. We have laws in this country, both in the federal and state books, against that sort of thing. And those people who engage in that should be thoroughly prosecuted and arrested. And I think most people, nearly everyone listening to today's broadcast, would certainly agree with that.
The problem is, of course, there's one rule for everyone.
Right.
And then one rule for just a little group.
Right.
So, yes, there may be these rules at federal law and state law,
sure,
all well and good.
Sure.
But if these people have the ability to get off those charges, or if the charges are never filed,
right,
because X knows Z and Z knows A,
right,
it's a mockery.
Sure.
It is a mockery. And this is the problem, that average ordinary people will be charged and hammered for whatever, some of the smallest crimes,
right,
and then these very, very well connected, powerful people who have much more serious crimes,
mm-hmm.
They're not prosecuted. So,
right,
yes, Ted, you're right, there are laws and rules, but they're only any good,
sure,
if the system is willing to utilize the rules and laws that were placed originally. And at the moment, we do have an environment, particularly in the United States, mm-hmm. where there is a culture that it doesn't matter because you won't be prosecuted. It
right.
doesn't matter.
Right.
As long as these people stay true to whichever oath or bond they made, they will be protected.
Sure.
And that's what Trump, this is the difference, because now that President Trump is president,
mm-hmm.
people just don't know anymore. They don't know whether they will be protected from all this wrongdoing. They can get away with it. You see, President Trump
right.
is saying, I'm not part of that group. Therefore, don't come to me to protect you, because I'm not going to. And that's why we've got this huge split in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And the media portray Trump as anti-women and anti-immigrant and anti-black and anti-this and anti-that.
Mm-hmm.
I have never known in the history of the Western world a media so anti its president.
Sure.
And when you look at it, you think, well, what's orchestrating this? Who's pushing this forward, and what have they got to gain by it?
Right.
And when you ask those questions,
right,
you realize it's nothing to do with the Republican and the Democratic Party.
Right.
It's to do with the fundamental core rule of law.
Right.
Who
right.
rules America? Is it this corrupt, evil, and I will say it, satanic group that has ruled for many, many years? Mm-hmm. Or is it the law-abiding, decent person who actually runs America? And that is what is going to be played out in the next few months.
I want to go back a little bit to the CNN reporter. His name was Jim Acosta. And I've looked at the video, and it is showing him pushing back and fighting back against President Trump. And I think you're right that kind of act actually engenders disrespect for not only the president, but also all authority here in the United States. And it brings to mind a situation where we had a couple of weeks ago where the Portland police, the mayor of Portland is a guy named Ted Wheeler. And Mr. Wheeler, actually, this was about 2 or 3 weeks ago, Simon. I don't know if you heard about it there where you are, but here there were riots in downtown Portland. There was one elderly lady in a wheelchair who was beaten up by protesters, another man who was hauled out of his car. A lot of violence occurred, and the mayor, Ted Wheeler, refused to call the police in to help anybody at all. So everybody was, it was like a jungle. At another instance in Portland, Mayor Wheeler refused to provide any City of Portland police aid to federal agents who were trying to issue arrest warrants within the city. And the city itself must be like a kind of a jungle down there right now. But this kind of disrespect for authority and the president's office exercised by Jim Acosta of CNN that you mentioned here, that's on the news, it's in other spots of the United States, too. I don't know if you'd heard about that, what happened in Portland, Oregon, but it's pretty upsetting.
No, I didn't hear, Ted, but I was going to tell you something. I'm not at all surprised. Cast your minds back to when JFK was president and the rights movement was in full swing. The governors in many of these states refused to authorize the highway patrol or the state police or the local police to protect black people exercising their rights. And so JFK actually had to send federal agents in to do the job of the police. So there's a precedent for this, that this occurs when you have corrupt local officials exercising the authority they have at local level. And then the president of the United States having to override that. Now, what happened was that instead of America turning against JFK and saying, look at that man, he's helping black people, what the white people in large numbers of the United States said, yeah, it's time for change. And they supported JFK because they felt that it was time for change. Sure. So when federal agents go in now, the same principle is going to happen, that it shows up corrupt local officials. We've got to remember there are some United States that are still run on a mafia type connection. I don't mean the Italian mafia. I mean the American mafia. There's still places where that is very strong, and it's not anything like it was in the 60s, 70s, and early 80s, but nevertheless, it's still strong. So you've got a heck of a lot to get through in America, and I always said, and I'm on record for saying it, that Great Britain was the power and country of the energy of the magic, and America was the action. It was where physically it was going to play out. And that's exactly what's happening. It's playing out now.
Interesting. If we can, let's go back to the pipe bombs. I had heard that these bombs were sent to former President Obama, Hillary Clinton, other public figures. But none of them actually worked. And there are allegations that these were actually false flags to engender sympathy for the Democrats just before the election.
I haven't got any information on how viable they were. What I've been told quietly is that most of them couldn't have activated, but there were two that were real bombs but didn't seem to be primed. In other words, they were working devices. They really could work. But the final bit needed to make them work hadn't been done. Now, whether that was an oversight by those responsible for whatever reason, or whether it was deliberately designed that it would never go off, there is a strong I can't say rumor because I don't work on rumors. There is a strong argument circulating that this was designed to put pressure on Trump. I haven't any information either way on that. Right. But what is interesting is that the guy that they have charged with making these bombs did seem to be in a rather clean van with excellent, nicely cleaned stickers all over it, being very pro-Trump. And I would have thought that a guy who was a bit down and out and lived and slept in his van, because he did declare he didn't even own any furniture, would have had a much more beat-up old truck. So there are inconsistencies here, and I just see this as part of the great game playing out, Ted.
Well, that term, Machiavellian, has surfaced from time to time in American politics, and certainly we've been given lots of false flags over the years, including 9/11, which I think was a false flag as well. None of the official explanation is correct, just like the so-called government official explanation of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. All that's was basically incorrect information about that as well. So I think the American people are very jaded when information about things like this come out. We're to the point where we would like to investigate further, and we don't take the official explanation often. We have to look beyond the surface to find out the truth often. So. But anyway, Simon, I wanted to ask you, we've had a lot of questions come in for you, and this one.
Good.
Yeah, this one actually is related to the elections, and it's from Bonnie in Philadelphia, and it says, "Hello, dear Simon, we love you for your common and enlightening presence during these chaotic times." She writes, "Now that the midterms are over, will the sealed indictments be open soon? We can only hope for the best. Many thanks, Bonnie."
Hi, Bonnie. Thank you for writing in. I hold your view. There is always this concern that I've voiced. I voiced the concern that that there's a great worry that if you have 60,000 indictments, you don't actually open the real serious ones, because you use it as a bargaining chip against the other side. And the negative side is incredibly powerful. We mustn't forget that. They've run your country for decades.
Right.
And you now have somebody in who's a loose cannon. He's a maverick. I will say that. Mm-hmm. And that's the point, because Trump can't be controlled
right.
in the same way that nearly every other president can. Now, there is a worry that he can say, look, providing you don't proverbially hit the nuclear button, I won't open these sealed indictments. Now, that's a very real worry. But against that, mm-hmm. I know for a fact there have been some very credible attempts to murder, assassinate President Trump. So if a side is going to try and kill its own president,
right.
I think the president's got nothing to lose. So I do expect those indictments to be opened.
Sure.
And now that the Republicans control the Senate, he's not under so much pressure to open them straight away, because I said, and I've did it on my radio shows, I've done it at conferences, I've said right. that it was a November, October, November, December were three crucial months, because if President Trump had lost both houses, he would have been in real difficulty, and he would have had to have opened the indictments quickly before the Democrats took control of the machinery of government. But now he holds the Senate. He could conceivably hold on until January, February or March before he opens the indictments.
Mm-hmm.
The other important point to answer here is that the number, this is an interesting fact for those of you who like facts and figures, there is approximately 5,000 new indictments being added every month.
5,000
That's an incredible
a month.
Number.
My
That's
goodness.
An incredible number. Now, when those numbers start to drop, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, we know that they've reached the point where they've got the target they're looking for. That's when they'll start opening them. They won't really be opening them now, because you need an army of people to draw up these documents. And I don't believe that they've got the resources to keep on adding to these indictments and then start opening them up in larger numbers. They just don't have the resources. So at some point, they've got to stop the indictment process of building and start opening them. Now, when we see that happening, we'll have a very clear idea that they're moving towards the prosecution phase. So I hope that's a good answer for you.
Yeah, it's a very good answer. And I figured it out in my head quickly, and 5,000 indictments a month, Simon, goes down to about 175, 180 indictments per day.
And right, but Ted, the important thing is here that it's possibly not well known, but I think by people in Europe won't really understand this. I think you guys get it.
Sure.
That people are making a mistake. They're thinking one indictment means one person. I'm being told there are as many as 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 names on each indictment.
Oh, my goodness.
Because an indictment could just be against an individual, but it could be against a group of individuals who are working as a corporation or working as a whatever it might be.
Okay.
So don't just assume that one indictment is one person. In a number of cases, there are more than that.
Right. Amazing. Amazing. We have a lot of other questions, but I have with
me. Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Michiko is here, Hayashi from the Moto Peace Project in Tokyo. And she's got a question, if that's okay.
Of course.
Yeah, Michi, go ahead and ask Simon a question.
Well, thank you. Hi, Simon.
Hello. Hi.
Well, I'm so happy I could ask you some questions about Japan. Do you have any information related to Japan or Prime Minister Abe and how Japan, what kind of role Japan will be playing in relation to the world affair in the future?
I think it really does depend on if President Trump obtains a second term of office.
Uh-huh.
You see, under the previous presidents, recent history, Japan was not protected as a supposed ally of the United States.
Uh-huh.
You know, over the last 40 years, through its economic building campaign, Japan became quite a close friend of the US on one hand, but became an enemy on the other, because Japan was seen as a country that was technologically advancing and was a threat to the US. There was also some very difficult and we call it dodgy in this country. Shady is a word that you guys will understand. Some shady deals that were being done. And as a result, Japan fell out of favor with the people who controlled America.
Mm-hmm.
Now that President Trump's in, Japan is not a target in the same way as it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so if President Trump is reelected, and if those indictments are opened, I can totally assure you he will be elected, because people will just be so shocked.
Mm-hmm.
But Japan will. This is the bit that's being missed. Japan is a useful tool against China, but that's not widely understood. China is on a world course to dominate everything. It wants to dominate everything. Technologically speaking, Japan still has, even after Fukushima, Japan still has great capabilities. And so what I'd like to see is Japan playing more of a role as a bulwark, as a defense, mm-hmm. against the massive expansion of the technology of China. I'm not talking about mass-produced. You can't beat China for mass production, but in terms of, can't just rely on Silicon Valley. So I always thought that Japan had a bigger role to play, providing somebody would front it, so that Japan could then be some form of boundary against the Chinese expansion, because people don't really understand China is a threat economically.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much, Simon.
Okay, thank you.
this concerns a metaphysical spiritual question, and it says, Dear Mr. Mark, could you please ask this question to Simon? Thank you so much for your wonderful work and wisdom you provide. My question concerns the fate of a soul after death due to suicide. I recently had two loved ones commit suicide, both whom I considered very bright, loving souls. One was 85 and the other just 16 years old. When we enter the afterworld having taken our own lives, is there a price for pay for not staying and accomplishing our mission, or a sort of handicap in reaching our source? If so, how can we help our loved ones who've regrettably made this wrong choice? I'm so grateful for any advice you can give me. With great love to you, Blue from Turkey.
First of all, please don't worry. It doesn't matter how you pass on. You are not penalized, because it is the brain that makes the decision, not the soul.
I see.
There is no penalty for someone who takes their own life. Mm-hmm. There is no penalty like that. There is only the difficulty. I'll spell the difficulty out. Let us say somebody is born on this planet and they have 20, 30 lifetimes. Usually it's a lot more, but we'll just go for 20 or 30 lifetimes. And they do something not very good. Mm-hmm. And they decide over these lifetimes that they're going to try and be a better person. And they try and work it through. And then through whatever reason, they end their physical life early. Mm-hmm. And they go, and then they come back. The amount of work they've got to do has to start off again from the lifetime where they ended their life prematurely. So in other words, when a person does that, they do not incur any extra penalty. But in the very tragic case of the 16-year-old, that person didn't have a longer life to try to work through what he or she, you know, would have to face. Mm-hmm. So when that person comes back, they're going to have to pick up again from when they were 16. So mm-hmm. the penalty is that we have a little bit extra work to do, but there is no, there's nothing that is placed on a person for killing themselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not going to get into the rights and wrongs of it. I'm just going to say, no, absolutely not. Sure. Do not ever think that somebody who reincarnates back, who kill themselves, has got some shackle or chain around their neck or a big post around them. No, absolutely not. And so please don't have any concern for your family or friends.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for I get questions like that sometimes, too. It's nice to get a little good perspective on that. We have another question. This is about the migrant caravan. I've received several questions. This is Julie from North Carolina. She writes, what does Simon think about the migrant caravan? Alternative news has shown migrants being bussed deep into the United States, and Texans are forming citizen militias. Could this be an extension of the riots that George Soros has tried to get started amongst Americans but never pulled off much violence? Thank you so much for your answer.
Right. Well, I don't know how much American citizens are actually finding out through regular media or indeed through truthful alternative news. But what I can tell you is that 8,000 American troops are now stationed on sections of the border, 8,000, and they're not just National Guard.
Right.
Many of these are regular troops. Now, this was more of a political move than a physical move. This was to put pressure on the Mexican government. Mm-hmm. Now, that Trump ordered 8,000 troops because I think his general said about 8,000 would do the job.
Right.
What the Mexican government have started doing is issuing work permits. Hmm. So what the Mexican government's trying to do is to get people not now to go into America, mm-hmm. but to offer them jobs in Mexico. Now, I think there's precious few jobs in Mexico anyway.
Right.
So I think it was purely a political move, but the Mexican government, I'm rather worried that the United States is putting military on its borders. We have seen in the past individual people paying for a drama to take place. We've seen organizations paying for it. Mm-hmm. Think about South America and the CIA in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. It was very much about funding one government or one part of a government or an opposition party. It's what they do. So try to destabilize, try to create a riot, try to bring a factional fighting. That's one way to take the spotlight off the real issue, right, which is satanic forces controlling America. So, yes, I do accept that in a number of cases there are paid agents trying to bring up trouble. The thing is, what a stupid thing to do, because Texans have a very strong history of sticking together.
Right.
Texans have a very, very strong time of defending themselves. So it's not going to play out for the bad guys. It's just going to end. That's what's going to happen. You see, by putting military on the border, the Mexican government cannot afford any sort of standoff. It can't afford to get into any difficulty with the powerful United States of America. So I think what we'll see is all of the doors being closed, not on the American side, but on the Mexican side.
Oh, that's interesting. That's very interesting. Michiko actually has a follow-up question about immigrants in other countries. Michiko, why don't you go ahead and ask Simon your question?
Simon, I see there are so many immigrants coming into many countries, like such as Germany or Europe, to France. Also, we do in Japan also have many people from different countries coming into Japan. Also, we see, of course, in the U.S., Canada. And I just wonder if that is purposefully being done by any entity or organization.
Well, let's first of all say that there are genuine immigrants. There are genuine migrants.
Sure, yes.
Think about Jewish people who think about Irish people. Think about all the people who 100 years, 150 years ago came to the United States and worked very, very hard and made or helped to make America the great country it is. So we have to look at what is a genuine movement of people and what is a drama orchestrated, controlled and planned. Now, when I look at the history of the United States of America, I see many families coming in to the U.S. from Ireland, some from Britain, all over the place. But what happened in Germany, what happened in some of these countries, is these are all men. They seem to be armies of men between the ages of 20 and 30.
That's true.
These are the very people who will riot. These are the very people who will fight. These are the very people who will cause a problem. I don't see families, man, woman, children coming in. I see women and children and men separately. I don't see groups. If a country is so desperate, my children are grown up. I wouldn't, I mean, different with Adolf Hitler and the Nazis, because that was completely different. But right. Under a normal situation, you wouldn't leave your wife and children behind necessarily. You'd want to take all of your family with you. And you know, when we think of all the boats that left different countries to go to the United States 150 years ago, generally it were families that would go. So I'm very, very concerned at seeing large numbers. Your audience may not be aware that over 1 million refugees or migrants have been settled in Germany in the space of 1.5 years.
Oh,
can you imagine 1 million people being moved into a country that's far smaller than the United States?
Right.
Where are these people going to go to school?
Right.
Where are they going to find jobs? What about the health care? How are the police going to cope? Where are they going to live? How can you move 1 million people into a regular-sized country and expect it all to work? They don't speak German, they don't dress the same, they have different cultures, they eat different foods. They're very obviously different. So, again, to finish up this question, if you want to destabilize a country, you can either set off a bomb or you can fill it full of people that don't speak the language, don't eat the same food, don't dress the same. and you break up the strength or the bond or the community glue that holds a village, a town, or a city together. And I can talk with authority here because in Great Britain, we had the most strongest community almost anywhere in the world. That's why Adolf Hitler couldn't beat Germany. But what happened was that our major principal city of London was bombed to bits by the Germans. As a result of that, all the new houses were built and families were broken up.
Right.
Before that, mum and dad and their children would live in one street. Great-grandparents would be another one. Grandparents around the corner. Your sister was just around the other block.
Right.
And that was destroyed, where a brother was sent 20 miles away. The sister was sent 50 miles away. Mum and dad were...
Right.
And we saw in Great Britain the damage you can do to an indigenous community when you forcibly push people out geographically to a place they have no roots. Now, this is a well-tried project. Now, you can't drop bombs on people without starting a world war, but what you can do is bring in migrants and refugees, and suddenly you look out your window and you think, I don't recognize this place anymore. This is not racism. This is about saying, how many schools have we got? How many hospitals have we got? How many police officers have we got? We've just doubled the population in the space of 3 months. How can the infrastructure cope?
Can't.
And this is the issue. So, yes, absolutely. It's in many cases, it's a plan to try to break up the family, and I'll just call it that.
I've seen firsthand what you're talking about, Simon. Recently, we were in Germany, and we saw little towns of maybe 2,000 people with people from Africa, nothing against them, but they were there, no jobs, hanging around the streets, homeless, from Middle East, homeless, hanging around, nothing to do. And these are people that Angela Merkel has brought into Germany, and they don't fit in. I'm sorry, they don't. They don't even speak German, don't even speak English, and they're there. We see it here in the United States. We have tons of immigrants here in the United States, nothing against them, because the immigrants are what made this country great. However, when you have uncontrolled migration over a southern border with no jobs for people here, you see the effects, and they're here too. My relatives in Germany said that that Germany used to be a very safe country, but nowadays the crime rate has gone up substantially because many people there, if you bring people in without the language skills and without any kind of job skills, their only alternative is to commit crime, and that's what's happened there. And it's happening in Germany from what we saw firsthand just last week, 2 weeks ago when we were there.
Yeah, well, you've seen it with your own eyes, Ted.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, and I've seen it happen here in the United States, too. It's hidden, but it's there, and it's a real problem, and especially, mind you, I'm not against legal immigration, but when you've got borders which are uncontrolled, people pouring over the border, no skills, no language skills, you're going to have problems. Definitely have problems. So, I guess that leads me to my next question. Michiko, I had one more question.
After the 2020 Olympics. I have so many questions today.
Yeah, that's okay. Why don't you ask about the Olympics in Tokyo?
I feel that something will be changing after the 2020 Olympic Games in Tokyo. Do you see any change afterward? If so, how would the world change, do you think?
Well, it's no coincidence that that's when the next election for president is around that time.
Interesting.
So the two are linked. Basically, as I've said earlier, if Trump is reelected, then such great spectacles as Olympics will get back to what they should be, which is a celebration of human endeavor and skill and resolve, rather than just a money-making project. It's also a very great chance for Japan to overcome some of the problems of the past and to project what it can do and to win that support. Mm-hmm. So I think it all depends on who's president. It really does. If you've got another Obama or Clinton in, then I think it's going to be a very, very, very difficult games in Tokyo, because that particular ethos did not like Japan.
Right, exactly. And of course, this goes into Fukushima. And I wasn't going to ask this, but we have a couple of minutes left. TEPCO, Tokyo Electric Power Company. I've read news articles recently, Simon, where they're starting to dump highly radioactive water from the Fukushima reactors right into the Pacific. I don't think that's right, but and then of course Japan has a draconian law now on the press that if they even discuss Fukushima or to criticize the government, they can be put in jail for up to 10 years. In Japan,
the problem with China and Japan is that both countries, but Japan actually more, has a absolutely fixed attitude towards honor. And that can actually be taken the wrong way, because if you're in a corporation, you believe that you have honor to your corporation. You have honor towards the product that you make, and you have honor towards those who head that corporation. And this is very different. We hardly see this outside of Japan. So it's quite difficult to get the truth out, simply because employees are confused between the honor for the planet or the honor of humanity versus the honor that they are obliged to have for the organization that employs them. Japan is a relatively small place. It's not a big place. And they have run out of facilities to dump all of this toxic soil. They've got a lot of toxic soil and the toxic water. And it is incredibly expensive. And there are very few countries in the world that have the facility to cleanse these materials. And I don't think there's any country in the world that could deal with the vast quantities of toxicity that they're dealing with. And I suppose out of I'm not condoning it, but out of desperation, they're just dumping this because they've got to get it off their land. And you were not getting the freedom of debate simply because the Japanese people have a very strong tradition to honor. And I believe personally they're getting mixed up and they're confused, because your honor should be towards your children and the children's future and not some executive that sits in a big office block.
Right. I couldn't agree with you more. Real quick, we've got 30 seconds left. I know Dr. Moto did experiments with love and gratitude where he was able to clean up radiation from nuclear power plants by just putting love and gratitude on a bottle of radioactive water. And within 48 hours, Simon, the water was cleaned up. But we've got about 15 seconds left. And Simon, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. It's always wonderful to talk to you. And thank you again for sharing your words of wisdom with all of my listeners today.
God bless to both of you, and God bless to the audience. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Simon. Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye,
bye.
My friend.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye. Cheers. Bye-bye. That was Simon Parks coming to us on a pre-recorded recording I did a few days ago, live from England. He's a wonderful fellow. He comes on Out of This World Radio on the first and third Fridays of every month. I wanted to remind everyone, on December 1st from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., I'll have a very special psychic and healing fair in Olympia. It's about an hour south of Olympia. The address is 9101 Stillicum Road. It's just off of exit 111 or 114. And as a give back to all the wonderful people who've supported my radio program this year, I'll be giving free readings to people who come. Also, too, at 11 a.m. that day, I'll be giving a free presentation on Tom Palladino's, my friend's, how he heals people with scalar energy as a free healing program. I'll also be discussing and giving people other healing techniques, including those from the Hollow Earth and Telos. And then at 12 noon, I'll be giving a free update lecture on a new book that was published called Messages from the Masters, with updates from Albert Einstein, President John F. Kennedy, Nostradamus, and others on some really wonderful things happening right now on the planet. Other psychics and light workers will be there, and I hope you can all come. It's free, and I hope you can come. With that, Eric, I'd love to wrap up this first hour with some beautiful water music from our friends in Japan, and then we'll be right back in a few minutes to celebrate some wonderful news for clean water for the Hopi Indians in Arizona. Please stay tuned, friends.
Hikari.